Go to the limits of your longing. I read this poem a long time ago in college and heard it again recently when Joanna Macy read it on the radio as her explanation of one of the ways that she maintains her energy working on climate change and human beings' connections to the environment and to life itself. God speaks to each of us as he makes us, then walks us silently out of the night. These are the words we dimly hear. You, sent out beyond your recall, go to the limits of your longing. Embody me. Flare up like a flame and make big shadows I can move in. Let everything happen to you, beauty, terror. Just keep going. No feeling is final. Don't let yourself lose me. Nearby is the country they call life. You will know it by its seriousness. Give me your hand. A couple of weeks ago, I was having an email exchange with a friend of mine about everything that was happening in the world, and she said, "It seems like the world is on fire." And even though we don't have a TV in our house, I have images in my mind from Ferguson and from the Gaza Strip, from the war with ISIS. Of course, I've seen movies by Robin Williams, and my husband had to talk me out of writing a letter to the Department of Homeland Security offering to adopt one of the children who had crossed the border without an adult. I listen to it all on the radio, and it's everywhere. You can't not absorb it. And I have heard the politicians who say, we just have to send those children back or they'll just send more. And I have heard the people complain about why does it always have to be about race? And it has all seemed hopeless and overwhelming. What can I do to respond meaningfully to all the suffering? And as I listen to story after story, I begin to hear a common thread, a brittle unawareness in all of the stories of violence and discord. And I am more and more convinced that the roots of all unjust behaviors and violent acts are rooted in the parts of our minds that we are the most unaware of. And that if we want violence and injustice in the world to end, we have to look into our own minds too. How does self-awareness help with the conflicts around the world? Well, as you know, the troubles that turn into Ferguson, that turn into international conflicts, show up and maybe have their seeds in cocktail party events and work stories. This summer, before Michael Brown was shot and Ferguson went into protest, a man I went to college with shared a story about an evening in his life in New York. To understand the story, you need to know that the man telling the story, we'll call him Joe, is African American, and his wife is European American. His wife, we'll call her Anna, works for an arts organization in New York. And they were having one of those fundraiser events where the big donors mingle with staff and talk about what they could do together. They were sipping cocktails and schmoozing when a big donor approached Anna and said, "Oh, I see you married the help." Took me a moment, actually, to figure out what he had said. There they are. This couple there to talk about art and possibility. It's a high-stakes fundraising event. And one of the people that they're trying to schmooze with says something pretty racist and pretty classist and just pretty weird. What do you do with that moment? You've had those moments when the room is silent even though it's loud. Anna is more poised than some of us are and said right away, "You can't say that. You can't just say that about my husband or about anyone." And she said it within earshot of a number of people at this event, knowing probably that it was possible that she could be reprimanded or even lose her job for being so bold with a big donor. Well, fortunately, everyone was as pleased with what she said as you probably are right now. And later, the donor got in touch with Anna and Joe and asked them to breakfast. And I thought, breakfast? But Joe went. He either knew or suspected that this person wanted to apologize. And the donor did. He said, of course, that he had joked this way with African-American people before and that they had all thought it was okay. And Joe said, "Boy, I've heard that a million times." And the donor asked what he could do to make it right. So Joe said that the man needed to acknowledge his own stuff in this situation, which is also a pretty bold move. And so the man did, right there over breakfast. He talked about how he had a lot of money, but that was about it. Almost no relationship with his children. He was being treated unsuccessfully for depression. His life was hollow. Just a lot of money. And Joe looked at this man and realized that this awful thing that he had said so jokingly the night before had come out of the bleakness of his own inner life. It didn't excuse the behavior for a minute, but it did allow Joe to remember the man's humanness. To remember that he was tender and that there was possibility for redemption here. Joe is a Sufi, which is the peaceful, mystical branch of Islam. He was part of some of the other branches of Islam at other times in his life when he was a little angrier. An anger that is more than understandable. But through his own struggles in the world and his own struggles with himself, he has come to the idea that all people are one. And he tries to live that, even when he encounters the most difficult things that people can say. He learns to hold his anger because it almost always means that he's actually hurt and not angry. And he tries to remember that we are one. He came to that through understanding his own pain and was then able to see it in another person. He has learned, as the poem says, that no feeling is final. In the story of this couple responding to the racism of the big donor. It is easy to decide that the big donor is bad and cheer for Anna and Joe, who are trying their best in the world. And as I reflected on this story, I began to think it's important for us to remember that in this story, sometimes each of us is the person who says, "You can't say that." And sometimes each of us is the person who says some version of, "Oh, I see you married the help," often without realizing that we've done it. And sometimes each of us is the person who stands there and has something outrageous said about us, about our own tender lives. That we inhabit each of the parts of this story at different moments in our lives. And it is hard to see that, and it is hard, most of all, to live it. Racism and classism isn't just something that happens in another state. It happens everywhere, including right here. And we're still good people. We've all done something this summer, probably, that was unintentionally fill in the blank. And we're still good people, still people who are making the best world we can, still people who are trying to make contact, still people who are worthy of the best. And I think that's one of the gifts that Joe gave to the big donor. At the same time that Joe didn't owe that man anything, and certainly didn't need to meet him for breakfast, he remembered that even though this man had made a pretty weird mistake, he was still a good person under that confusion. That his unawareness caused the trouble. But he was longing to set things right. And Joe engaged him at that point of longing for things to be right, even if he didn't know quite what that was. And that's what I think we are called to do. Engage the world in that place of longing that we each have for things to be right in our own lives and in the world around us. And that is why I have said I want this to be a place where everyone has a spiritual practice. Because spiritual practices are one of the ways that we can be present for whatever is happening, whether it is a mess or whether it is beautiful. And it's a way that we get to know our own minds and get to know them in a way that we can be gentle with ourselves. So that when we do the things that the big donor did, when we accidentally spill stuff all over someone else, we can understand it and accept that this is part of living in the world and that we can set things right. And I've also said that I want church to be a place where we can talk about anything, by which I mean not only have this be a place where we can express grief and outrage and fear about Ferguson and Ebola and what's happening in the Middle East and what's happening to children in our own country, but have this be a place where we can come and say, "I think I did something that wasn't good. How do I get it right?" And be received with compassion. And be received by people who say, We all occupy all three parts of the story. We'll figure it out together. We'll move that big stone one piece at a time. When I thought about telling you Joe's story this morning, I had to call him up and ask him, "Is it okay if I tell my congregation your story?" And it took me about 4 days of thinking about it, and walking around in the living room, trying to decide if it was okay to ask him if I could tell his story, in which he was the target of racism, and I was going to tell it as a white woman in a pretty white state. Was that co-opting his story? Was asking him not okay? Was I going to ask him in a way that was weird and kind of needy? I finally just asked him, and he said, "I think it's great to tell this story because it's hard to tell these stories, and it's hard to talk about all the parts of it, and yeah, tell it." But all that thinking is my awareness that I can fumble out into the world and say things that I don't even quite know how they're being received. And that's part of living in all three parts of that story. So Joe gave me a gift too, because he was pretty relaxed about it. He just wants the conversation to be possible. He wants there to be places like this congregation and like the Sufi community he's building. Places where you can talk about all parts of it, however messy it gets. So here we are at the beginning of a year, embarking on probably a lot of conversations about all manner of things. Some of those conversations will get messy, and that's how we'll move the stones. Whether they're the stones that are in our own hearts or the stones that are on other continents that we know need to move. So I invite you into the journey of deepening our spiritual practices together, finding a way to receive the call of the world. So that we can respond deeply, truly, so that our lives can flare up like flame and give the brightness that we have here to the world.